Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Tyke. A well-crafted novel can immerse us in a place, make us relate to the characters, and even instill a feeling that carries us through to the very last page. Minnesota writer Wendy Webb's latest book transports us to a scene that a lot of Wisconsinites might find familiar, the shores of Lake Superior. The fate of Mercy Albin also introduces us to a likable protagonist. Grace Albin returns to her childhood home and learns her family's past is lined with dark and disquieting secrets. By the end, we are pretty thoroughly creeped out. And that's actually a good thing. Wendy Webb joined us on a recent visit to Milwaukee. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
So maybe I'm assuming something I shouldn't with this question, but I would imagine that you write books that you yourself would like to read. So my question is, why do you like to be scared by a book?
You know, that's a really good question. And in fact, my friends think it's so funny that I write scary books because I'm such a wimp when it comes to scariness. I read The Shining back in the 80s. I'm still not over it. I am still scared by The Shining. So it kind of happened. I love ghost stories and I love things that go bump in the night. And it just sort of, I didn't set out to write a ghost story, but it just sort of happened that way.
Is there a distinction in your mind between the idea of being scared and being creeped out?
Yes. I don't like to be scared, and I don't want to scare my readers, but I just want to give them a little spine-tingling, goosebump feeling. But I really don't want to scare anybody. I'm not writing, about scary clowns in, sewers and
There's not gore and gross stuff either.
No, not a bit.
It's just if I had to – actually, I was describing this to somebody. I felt like as I read this, I was uneasy the entire time.
Oh, see, great. That's exactly what I'm going for. They call it gothic suspense, and I didn't even know there was such a genre when I started writing, but that's what they are, I guess.
The book is set on the shore of Lake Superior, mm-hmm. which also happens to be the place from which you write. Is place its own sort of character as you construct a story like this?
You know, I have found that I start with place, with either an area of the country or, more often than not, a big house. That sort of inspires me, and then the story just flows from there.
I don't know that I have anything in particular to support this feeling, but it seems like there's something more haunting about Lake Superior than maybe the other Great Lakes.
I think there is. I love Lake Michigan. I've been traveling a lot around Lake Michigan. Love the little communities here. But Lake Superior just seems more fierce and foreboding and, for the people who live on it, almost alive.
And remote in a way. I mean,
yes.
You live in a large city on Lake Superior, but it's a large city that is very much distant from every place else.
It is. And the weather doesn't help matters.
So doing an interview on this book is a tricky exercise because the twists and turns start happening essentially on page one. But let's frame the story a bit. Where exactly are we and what sets things in motion?
I always tell people it is a mystery about long-buried family secrets that bubble to the surface one summer. And it starts when our heroine, Grace, goes home for the first time in about 20 years when her mother dies under questionable circumstances. So that's how we kind of slide into the story.
And she has she is part of the family secrets or has access to the family secrets, and she dies just as she's about to tell the story to a journalist.
That's right.
We follow the story through the eyes of Grace Albin, who, as you say, has just come back to Albin House after almost 20 years. Why was it important to the story for her to have been removed from Albin House for all that time?
I wanted her to have a sense of discovery. And if she was just going home to her parents' house where she'd been forever, there wouldn't have been that discovery and newness for Grace that there was for her being away Okay, that was literally
right, exactly. But and as we say, it is tricky to because we really don't want to give that much away. That is
right.
the beauty to this,
right?
How much are you surprising yourself when you write a story like this, and how much do you have to have already plotted out? You know, how many mileposts do you have that you're trying to meet as you write?
You know, I love that question because a lot of authors do very careful outlines, but I find that I don't. I tried to outline a book once, and it felt then when I got to writing it, it felt like I was writing a term paper. So I do not outline. I go in with a general idea of the story I want to tell, and then I just write it as like my readers are reading it. So I'm surprised by things that happen, and I feel that my readers will be surprised too.
Does it make the writing process more challenging? Do you find yourself having to constantly go back to make sure that you don't have these, you know, errors in, you know, continuity errors, if you will?
All the time. I write myself into a corner all the time. So when I get to that point, I always tell people, you know, I don't really believe in writer's block. I can always sit down and write something, but it's plot that stops me sometimes. And I'll have to just, you know, close my computer and walk the dog and just kind of think it out.
There is a book within a book that plays out as the story goes on, and we learned that that book was inspired by the events that took place in Alban House's past. Was there anything in particular that inspired this story for you?
Yes. I wanted Grace to find out what happened at Alban House 50 years ago. And so just as a writer, I thought, well, how is she going to learn this? Well, her mother's dead. She can't tell her. Of course, the maid could give her some enlightenment. But in my first book, the maid told the story. And so I didn't want the maid telling the story again in my second book. And I thought, well, this guy's a writer. Let's have him write it.
There is a love interest that turns up for Grace, and he is actually a clergyman mm-hmm. that she meets. And what struck me about him is he seems like he is, for lack of a better term, the only kind of ray of lightness that shows up in this book.
You know, and the way that came about is kind of interesting, too. I wanted her to have a love interest because, you know, it's kind of a fun escape from a suspenseful plot. So, she can fall in love and whatever. And I thought, well, who's that going to be? It could be the lawyer. Who's she going to meet? And I thought, no, she's planning a funeral. Let's have her meet the minister. And what I did immediately when I thought of that is I called my former brother-in-law, who happens to be a Lutheran minister. And he sort of walked me through, because I didn't want to offend any people, and some pretty ugly things happen and otherworldly things. And I would go to Paul and I'd say, okay, so imagine this is happening to you. How would you react? And he gave me a lot of insight in that.
Well, and again, I think this is a little tricky because, as you say, otherworldly things happen, and there's not really a lot of reconciling of the paranormal with religion that goes on.
Right. And, you know, and again, I didn't really intend this, but my readers have told me that they really like the dichotomy between good and evil, that Matthew is a minister and he's kind of coming from the good side. And then there's another character in the book whose name I won't reveal that is pretty evil. And the readers really like that interplay.
I've read a number of interviews with people who write suspense, and they've talked about the challenge of credibly setting a scary story in the present when everyone is connected with cell phones and the internet. Mm-hmm. Was it a challenge for you to make the suspenseful scenes happen in a way that people would believe that, you know, it's not a, oh, my God, you know, another cell phone has died?
You know, and yes. The issue of technology, I really try to kind of leave that out so the story seems sort of timeless because, you know, I read a lot of books that were written maybe back in the 70s and they seem kind of dated now. And I hope that people will be reading my books for a long time to come. So I try to leave all that stuff as far away as I can.
And it also helps that that some of the suspense plays out 50 years before.
That's right. That's right.
You wrote on your blog about what it takes to put together an effective paranormal mystery. And one of the points that you make is about making the reader comfortable in a place and then pulling the rug out from under them. What are you getting at?
Not that I like to do that in my real life. The thing that really interests me when I'm reading a book is when I'm opening those pages, I want to go to that place. So I want the place to be kind of warm and inviting, but then, you know, some evil and some scary things creep in. And that's just real life. You know, things happen. I want the stories to seem like they're real life.
How did Grace Albin change in your mind between the time you started writing the story and what's in the pages that are sitting on the console in front of me?
When she enters the book, when we enter her life, I guess is a better way to say that, she's coming out of a divorce. She's a little bit annoyed at her daughter. She's angry that she's got to be home again and all these responsibilities. And through the course of the book, she grows to understand what it means to be the head of the Albin family. I think she finally grows up. She leaves her past behind and she grows up.
Was that character development a surprise to you?
It was. It was. And I started writing it but her voice was very clear in my mind. But then just through the things that had happened in the book, she really does grow. There's a nice arc there.
There is something it's interesting. I find myself comforted by whenever I read a scary story that's written in first person past tense. I know right away that the main character is not going to die.
Or do you?
Or at least I think that. Yes, that's
Well, and the interesting thing, this book ends, and I'm not going to give anything away, but there's a little scary epilogue at the end. And when I originally wrote the manuscript, it didn't have that in it. I had everything kind of tied up in a nice, neat bow. And my agent said, ooh, what if you put a scary ending on it? And so many readers have loved that ending.
It very much is a or do you
yeah.
kind of ending.
Yeah, exactly.
The end, or is it? You mentioned your real life, if you will. Does your work as a magazine editor overlap in any way with your fiction, or are you really exercising different muscles in these two worlds?
It was a problem for me because I'd been a journalist my whole career. And as a journalist, we tell stories. But as a novelist, people kept saying, you have to show it, don't tell it. And I thought, what the heck does that even mean? Why can't I say Grace is angry? Well, because it's boring to read. And so writing a novel is a completely different form of writing. And it took me a while to get it.
Well, I also wonder about the idea of, you know, having to not worry about burying the lead, if you will, because you can't give everything away at the top or nobody will read the next 280 pages.
Exactly. I can't say in the first paragraph, well, here's what happens and now I'll tell you how. You know,
more fun or just a different kind of fun?
It's a different kind of fun. I still love writing magazine articles. I'm still the editor of Duluth Superior Magazine, and I just love it. But you really get to stretch out when you're writing a novel, and you really get to know those characters. And, you know, they sometimes start talking to you in the middle of the night, which is a little disconcerting given my characters.
do your magazine readers, do they do a double take when they read your fiction?
You know, they love it and they come out and support me and I'm just really grateful for that.
Well, Wendy Webb, we're grateful that you were here. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Wendy Webb lives in Duluth. Her latest novel, set on the shores of Lake Superior, is The Fate of Mercy Albin, and she joined us on a recent swing through Milwaukee. I'm Mitch Tyke. I hope we don't creep you out too much. We're here every weekday morning at 10 and weekend afternoons at 3. Do join us again tomorrow for Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. It's 11 o'clock, and keep listening because fresh air is next.